Can't sell it anywhere else, man. It's right here in West Virginia.
This is the Community Podcast with Zach Beard and Aaron Marco, two Morgantown real estate agents highlighting the good people of our city and state. We're taking you behind the sign, connecting interesting people, places, and faces, why they do what they do, and how they came to be doing it. We're building a better community. And we're rolling.
And live. Good morning, Zach.
Good morning, Aaron. Yellow B&I this morning.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Out after it. That's what you got to do.
Mr. President.
Currently the president. Currently.
That's right. How long have you been
just
in B&I?
Just a figurehead, clearly.
Figurehead, yeah. You've been there for what, a year?
I think, almost coming up on 3 years, actually.
Wow, okay.
Coming up on 3 years, surprisingly enough.
And that's for not real estate, but your other endeavor.
That is it. That's it. You want to learn how to shoot good? Here you go.
Shoot good?
Yep. Fast and accurate.
Fast and accurate. All right.
No promises on grammar. Just
that's right.
Shoot good.
Just shoot good. One lines
of not a grammar instructor
of B&I. I'll give you a testimonial.
I love it.
So I was that old traditional shooter. Pull up the gun. Hold it there, steady on that sight.
Try to hit the bullseye.
Pull the trigger.
Yeah.
You felt really good when you got it too.
Yeah. That's a good thing. There's nothing wrong with accuracy.
I start talking to you, and you're like, you're going to die.
Yeah, if it takes you 6 minutes to get a shot off.
Yeah. So, a little time with you on the range. And
you were smoking it.
Yeah, and I was doing pretty good.
Yeah, you're doing great.
So, learned the proper technique there for drawing up the gun to the target.
That's it.
Don't spend time with your eye on that little sight.
No. Center mass.
Center mass.
That's right. Job's a shooter, too. I'm not sure how we started off on shooting, but I love it. It's certainly right in my wheelhouse.
It was B&I, I guess.
Right? Yeah, B&I. Yeah. Right. Yeah, B&I, another B&I member with us this morning, Joe Woods of Appalachian Mercantile.
Yeah. Joe Woods, yeah.
How
good
you doing,
morning,
Joe?
Guys. How's it going?
It's going fantastic.
The sun's shining here now in December.
It's incredible. I mean, the weather. I was actually kayaking 2 days ago on the lake.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, I know you can't do that in the wintertime, but it was a beautiful day. And
yeah, I'm pretty excited. My family got me a gift certificate for a little John boat for my son and I to go out fishing for Christmas.
That's such a great thing to do with the kids.
Yeah, he's jazzed.
Man.
We've got to go. We're going to find one of those little two-man boats, and take it out on the lake and the ponds and that kind of stuff. So
I used to do that when I was a kid. I loved it, especially go out at night with a lantern. That's a big time for a young kid like that.
He's super, that's all he wanted for Christmas was fishing stuff. His letter to Santa was printed in the Dominion Post, and it said, "Dear Santa, please bring me fishing things." That was it.
That's fantastic.
Did you do any gigging when you went with lantern out there in the water?
Frogs,
yeah.
I did, I've done some frog gigging. I personally like frog legs. It's one of my favorite things.
Done right? I agree. Pretty good.
A lot of things done right are good, yeah.
Oh, that's true.
No one likes anything that's not done right.
What was that old seafood restaurant? Was it called Back Bay on the
Mile Ground? Yeah, yeah.
That was my first experience with frog legs there, and they were not my favorite.
Well, it's funny. So prior to Back Bay, there was Dolphy's that was in Masontown, Pennsylvania. Yeah. Now that's
still there.
The owner of that actually came down here with Chef Ken, who ultimately ended up with Back Bay down there, opening up. So he was a chef at Dolphy's. So my first experience with frog legs was at Dolphy's many, many, many years ago at this point now. But I did like them.
Ken and his wife still have Back Bay Catering, actually.
Right.
You can still order catering from them. Yeah, my sister just told me the other day that they had their office Christmas party was catered by Back Bay Catering, and she was like, man, the food was so good.
Yeah, I actually helped them with the catering. It's been a couple years ago now, but they do a lot of mines. They do a lot of, big mine caterings, like 400 or 500 people, as they're coming off shift and whatever, a couple times a year when they're doing trainings, this and that. Ooh. So I've actually helped them on a couple of those things.
I had no idea. So where are they located? Where do they do their prep at?
Carmichael's.
Yeah, Carmichael's, PA, right across the border there. Wow. So they do a lot in Morgantown still, being so close.
Yeah, they kind of had a converted space there next to their house. And it used to be a garage, but they've kind of converted into kind of prep kitchens. And they use another ancillary kind of hub-like kitchen that they do some of that stuff at.
A little community center there in Carmichael's that they rent.
That's right.
I had no idea.
Actually, at the time, we still had the Benton Grove banquet location when I was helping them with that, so I actually did some of the prep work on our site there, the delivery and so forth.
Well, we're here at Joe's store here. Growing up, my uncle had a store. It was a general store. That word general is kind of like a – it's just a common word.
The general stores were – that was – all stores at one point were a general store. It seems like, you know, it was, you get your farm implements, you would pick up, you know, all your goods and hardware, you
anything
know,
kind of
one location.
Yep. You evolved that word into mercantile. Same general thing, but man, it's got some more pizzazz with it.
Yeah, this is a great thing. This is a great store down here. So you opened up now in 2021. You opened up the store, Appalachian Mercantile, curator of Appalachia's finest goods. Did I say that right?
That's correct.
That's exactly right. And so what is the crux of what exactly you do down here, Joe?
Sure. So a couple of things. Our mission, our vision is to bring the best of Appalachia to the world. So a few years ago, J.Q. Dickinson Saltworks, which is in Malden, West Virginia, they began kind of curating these handmade artisanal things from Appalachia. The Saltworks has been there for a couple of hundred years in Malden. There's actually, the Iapetus like ocean, which is this ancient ocean that's still there under the Kanawha Valley. And for 200 years, they've been pulling that saltwater brine up from 400 feet below Charleston and naturally by hand with handmade tools making this all natural salt. They lay it out in these sun houses and let it evaporate in the sun. It's all natural. No chemicals, no nothing. I mean, literally, there's a lady whose job it is to sit there with wooden tweezers and, like, look for any impurities to take them out. They don't bleach it. They don't do anything crazy to it. It's just natural salt. Makes it flavorful, very mineral rich, very awesome. So a few years ago, Nancy Bruns, who's my business partner here at Appalachian Mercantile, started curating handmade stuff from people she met through the business. You know, they're kind of realized that there are people all over Appalachia making beautiful stuff out of like the best ingredients and the best materials. And so she had the idea to start curating those things and start doing an online store and like monthly Appalachian themed boxes with a few different products in it and that sort of stuff.
So that's kind of taken on a big thing, these monthly subscription boxes.
Right, yeah.
And stuff,
so that was 2018. They started doing that through the Saltworks in Malden, through J.Q. Dickinson. And then last year, Nancy and I started talking about my vision for this place, a place to put all of these handmade, artisanal, local things that all these people were creating. And, so we kind of worked through it and decided, you know what, yeah, let's do it. So we decided to bring that curation to a brick and mortar here in Granville, West Virginia. We're a part of New South Square, which has New South Media. There's going to be the Silo in the Square, which is a little event space that's under construction in the back now. They actually took a silo from a farm, brought it here, and reconstructed this 30-foot silo. And that's the entrance to the event space. It's really, really neat. And so we wanted to be a part of this kind of destination that was being formed here in Granville. And so that's what we've done. We've brought our curation of all of these Appalachian, you know, artisanally made products, all of this stuff that J.Q. Dickinson Saltworks makes. You know, we have obviously our, you know, heirloom salt is kind of the pure, the salt that comes as a result of the process. And then we take that salt and do a lot of things with it. We actually just released 5 new spice blends this fall using our salt and some spices. We've got an Appalachian za'atar, a bagel seasoning, an herb seasoning, a barbecue seasoning, and a ramped up ranch, which actually has dried ramps, West Virginia wild ramps, and like a ramped up ranch dry seasoning, which Amber Miller just told me today her family put in their pasta that they made on Christmas, like in the dough.
Oh, wow.
And it was incredible. They said it was like the best, just great flavor and stuff on the pasta. So,
well, we'll take a deeper dive on some of these products here in a minute. You know, I love origin stories. I've known you for a long time, and Joe, and I know you've done a lot of things. And much like kind of the beginning of this is, it's kind of frenetic. There's a lot of different things you've done over the years. You've kind of been a serial entrepreneur to some degree, been very driven. I first met you as a sales rep, I believe.
Right.
When we had the restaurant. So you were coming in trying to shoehorn your way in there like everybody does, so I've known you for a long time, and I've known you've done a lot of different things. Take us a little bit through your career and how you kind of ended up here, because I know you have a deep history in the culinary arts, and you've done a lot of things related to the culinary arts, as well as some of the ancillary businesses like the cutlery and so forth. Right. So if you wouldn't mind, tell us a little bit about what you did.
Sure. So I knew I wanted to be a chef early on. When I was young, I started making dinner for my family because I was the first one home. Siblings were in high school, I was in middle school, I'd get home first, and, you know, it started with box dinners and putting stuff together. And I would start adding my own little twists to the hamburger helper or whatever it was, you know, and really enjoyed how much my family enjoyed what I had done, you know, that I had done something different. So I knew I wanted to be a chef, went to WVU. I went, the first kitchen job I ever had actually was when I was in high school. I don't know if you remember Neighbors Bar and Grill.
I do,
it was
yeah.
at the top of the hill by Ramada Inn.
Uh-huh.
Mike Sesek, actually, he works
at Cisco, Mike, yeah.
owned that, yeah. So I was like 16 years old. Our neighbor was working there and was really sick and couldn't find anybody to cover his dish shift at Neighbors. And so I went. They said, hey, I've got a guy. So I went in to cover his dish shift. I hadn't really been in a restaurant kitchen before. I didn't know anything about it. And I absolutely fell in love that night. Just the heat, the speed, the noise,
you know, oh, yeah.
the smells, the flavors. I mean, it was just... You know, I left that night with like a big hunk of prime rib at the end of the night because, you know, it was prime rib and they just kind of divvied it up at the end of the night. And so I just fell in love. I mean, I was hooked immediately in high school.
Yeah, there is a thing about it when you're in the heat of it and it's pretty yeah, awesome.
I knew it's what I wanted to do. So I went to school. Then I went to culinary school at Pierpont Culinary Academy in Fairmont. Worked at the waterfront place, worked at the Fairmont Field Club. I went to the Greenbrier, and then, of course, that was a whole different level of experience, you know.
Yeah, you just leveled up.
Without a doubt. So you were a chef there?
Yeah, uh-huh. yeah. I cooked there for a while. I loved it down there, but there wasn't much for my wife to do down there in Greenbrier County as far as her career, so we didn't end up staying there. But got a ton of great experience, and then came back here, and I worked at Oliverio's and, you know, ran a couple of places around here. And eventually, I loved the food, but... You know, I was getting ready to start a family and was looking for an opportunity to do something else with food, and that's how I ended up.
And it's a grind, man. I mean, when you're going to start a family, I mean, if you're in an authoritative position or in a high-level position in a restaurant here, it's tons of hours, man, tons of hours.
Yeah, I was getting off work at midnight, you know, working at the hotel and get – You know, you get home.
And you're working all the holidays,
right.
or at least you used to. This the past year or so has been a little bit different in regards to the holidays, and, you know, obviously, but I know what it takes.
Yeah,
and it's not an easy thing to do with a family.
Right, absolutely not. So actually the food sales rep opportunity came along from Francis Henderson. I don't know if you remember
I love Francis.
He's since passed, but he was kind of my mentor in that. He brought me along and said, hey, I think you'd be pretty good at this. You know,
and that seems to be a pretty steady pipeline, you know, from the restaurant business into the sales side.
Well, you understand.
Right.
The operator's standpoint,
what they need,
and what they need,
what they need, so the quality, maybe the things they don't even know they need.
That's a lot of it too.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of operators don't actually know their business that well. You know,
right? You see those shows all the time on, you know, what was your experience before you started this restaurant on like Kitchen Nightmares or something?
Yeah,
right.
Like, oh, I was a lawyer.
Everybody said I make a great pie.
People love my tailgate food. Nothing against, you know, people starting
That was a coffee break right there.
That was a coffee break. I caught that, too.
Everybody at the same time, grab coffee.
But anyway, so I started being a food sales rep and kind of doing restaurant consulting, helping people kind of with their operations and figuring all that out. And, so Grindstone, Sharpen & Supply, was a company that kind of came out of that experience. I realized that there was nowhere to get your knives sharpened around here.
And, people, man, a dull knife in the kitchen, man, is a nightmare. I used to never, no one was allowed to touch my knives. They're my knives. Do not, and definitely if I let you use it, don't put it on the steel.
Right.
Do not steal one of mine. Never.
I lost the tip of a Global Chef knife one time because a dishwasher thought he was being helpful and dropped it into a sanitizer bucket in the sink. And, you know,
dishwashers never saw my knives. I washed all my knives. That's it.
Well, can you tell me more about your sales rep experience with Aaron? I'm just curious about how that evolved.
When Aaron had the banquet.
At the Benton Grove?
Yeah, Benton Grove. Yep. I was his sales rep. And so
not at Alibaba, but at Benton Grove?
No, but at Benton Grove. Okay. Yeah. We worked together to, you know, get him the products he needed, and he was always a good customer. You know,
yeah, it worked out great. There was a lot of neat things at AF Wendlings. That was through AF Wendlings at the time. And
First it was Cisco, actually.
That's right. First it was Cisco, right.
And then a few years later, I moved over to AF Wendlings. They're a local food service purveyor out of Buchanan. Been there since 1913, so over 100, you know, almost 110 years. They started as like a butcher shop, delivering meats around Buchanan area on the back of a truck, as you do. And in 1913, and then they evolved and grew, and they still have a big USDA like meat facility there. And
so, did you focus more on like private type vendors or bigger restaurants?
Restaurant-wise? Yeah. So At Cisco, it was both. I managed the account at like the casino in Washington and some larger accounts there. But Windlings was more serviced the independent restaurants, locally owned
street
restaurants.
Business.
Okay. That was always their focus. That's how they kind of have grown over these 100 and some years, and really enjoyed that company a lot. I was doing Grindstone still kind of on the side while I was working there, helping people sharpen their knives and that sort of thing. And then, this opportunity kind of came along, Nancy and I. It was really funny. Some friends of mine were in a meeting, totally unrelated to this. And Nancy was talking about expanding into Morgantown. And he said, well, you got to talk to Joe Woods. He's got this concept that seems like a perfect fit for you. And she's like, Joe Woods, the chef? It's like, yeah, I know. So my phone rings and we had dinner at Hill and Hollow, actually. We met up and had dinner and kind of talked through it. And by the end of dinner, this was happening. I mean, we were just both so excited about it. Our visions matched, so well that we both have been looking for the opportunity to kind of create a place that you can come to and have this experience of all of these handmade Appalachian things. There are people who do similar concepts, but nobody's doing just what we're doing, especially not with the cafe.
Well, that's a point I wanted to bring up in a minute, but I want to give you a little bit of a testimonial too, because of the time I've known you. I'm a question asker. When I get purveyors and stuff, and I've been approached by many, many purveyors coming in trying to get my business, I want to know about the product. I want to know where it's made. I want to know how it's made. I want to know. I ask a lot of in-depth questions. And you're somebody that always peels the onion a couple layers deeper than everybody else and gets an in-depth knowledge. So when they ask those questions and you have answers, that's a big bonus for me. Like, if you can't answer my basic questions, then I'm definitely not buying food from you.
Sure.
And so this dovetails so well with what you do, because you know the products that are in here. They're made artisanally. And then on top of all the really neat products you have in here, you also have the cafe as well, where you're actually made to order food.
Right. So we're actually here 7 to 7, Tuesday through Saturday. And so the cafe is kind of our twist on a classic cafe with, that Appalachian twist. So something we're actually becoming known for is our smoked trout bagel. So you've probably seen a bagel with lox, smoked salmon, capers. But we do it with smoked trout and pickled ramps instead of capers. So you get that awesome Appalachian twist on, that cafe bagel.
On a classic.
Same with sandwiches, salads. We smoke everything here. We smoke all of our meats here in-house. And we, when we try as much as we can to procure everything locally from farmers, just like the products out here in the retail area. I've got Footprints Farm and Pike Mountain Farm and
Firefly
Farms and Accident Maryland and Pleasant Lane. And, we're trying to get as much as we can. We use Rising Creek Bakery for our Salt Rising bread and Leroy's Bakery for pastries and stuff. So we're just kind of doing the same thing that we're doing with these retail products. We're trying to, shine a light on these local growers and farmers and makers to let other people see, you can do awesome things with these products, right?
Sure.
And just support, that's, the rising tide, right?
That's right. All boats are lifted, right?
That's kind of what I'm trying to do here. I'm trying to support everybody and get everybody, And here in Morgantown, we have a lot of specifically local stuff like the Made with Love by Krista and Two Fat Cousins barbecue sauces. And we have a lot of products that are specific to the Morgantown area, not just, West Virginia or Appalachia.
So is your smoker here on site?
Yeah, it's out back.
Oh, nice.
We do a hickory and cherry, and we smoke the trout, we smoke our turkey here, we smoke the chicken here. Actually, our beef roast for our new beef sandwich, we're instead of searing it in a pan, we're starting it out on like a high heat on the wood smoker. And so we try to, impart as much flavor as we can, and again, just kind of be unique.
Now, do you sell just if different. Someone wants to get a smoked trout?
So actually, it's funny you say
special
that.
Order.
There are a couple of people have asked us. We actually just did, we do a barbecue tofu.
Okay.
We take tofu and treat it like brisket burnt ends. We rub it, smoke it, glaze it, just like burnt ends. And we have a regular who actually ordered a pan of that barbecue tofu and a couple of containers of our homemade pickles for their Christmas Eve dinner. That's what their family wanted for Christmas Eve was our barbecued tofu and homemade pickles. So, and even down to the homemade pickles, pimento cheese dip, we make a pickle dip that a couple of the people in B&I love, Ashley and a couple others are
obsessed.
Man,
there was some stuff on that table. And I was looking on the shelves as I was here a little bit earlier, looking for some of the stuff that we had initially. on your kind of open house when you were first opening up. And it was just so many great things on that table.
Yeah, and even the charcuterie and the cheese, we really try, you know, that's been a little bit of a challenge. It's a little harder to find local charcuterie, but Parma Sausage in Pittsburgh does a really good job with a lot of products. And so we use a lot of their stuff for our charcuterie. And, you know, like I said, it's just we're always looking to kind of bring to light, you know, that, I have my dream job now, right? I mean, I've always enjoyed my work, you know, working with food, but doing, you know, I get to wake up in the morning.
It does seem like all roads kind of led here. It did.
Right? I mean, it really did. And so, like, I wake up in the morning and I get to just shine a light on really cool things that really cool people are doing in Appalachia. And I just don't know how it gets better than that.
It makes it a lot easier to get out of bed every morning, doesn't it?
Sure does.
Yeah, right on. That's super cool. That's awesome.
With all these, go ahead. With all these really cool things, though, comes a lot of really hard work. I mean, you got to keep these shelves stocked. You got to keep the
we actually had
cafe full.
Overwhelming support during the holiday season. I mean, we hoped for that, and it really has taken off. We've been 3 months now. We've been here for 3 months, and the last month just before the holidays was just incredible. And people are what I love is people are now finding me, right? Like, people are getting the word out about what we're doing. And so I'm starting to get phone calls and emails from makers, from artisans that are saying, hey, I heard about what you're doing. I follow you on Instagram. You know, I want to be a part of it, you know. And actually, a few of our employees came that way. I mean, they had heard about what we were doing, and they just wanted to be a part of it. So that's really cool.
That is very cool.
Yeah. We're really happy with how it's come out. And, you know, it's ever-evolving, too. I mean, like I said, people are finding me all the time.
Well, not easy to open a business in 2021.
Right.
No. You know, and I mean, it takes some steely nerves to kind of do that too, because anytime opening a new business is not an easy thing. Right. You know that as well as anybody does. You've been around it long enough.
Right.
But it takes a special person really to open during the kind of the year that we've had through this. And so it's great to see you thriving over here.
Thank you. Yeah, the construction costs and delays and stuff were definitely a challenge this past year. But, you know, we were really happy with, you know, we worked with the Mills Group and Carpenter Construction to do this build out. And, you know, this was just a metal shell when we started. This was the former Bubba's Garage.
Right.
Local people will probably remember that. It was I wouldn't call it a junk store, but it was kind of a, you know, kind of a junk store. He had a lot of...
They were curating stuff in here, too.
Yeah, he had a lot of furniture out front in the parking lot.
I bought some furniture in here, office furniture.
So a lot of the locals here in Granville have said, you know, they just can't believe what we did to the place, you know, compared to what it was before. And
it's great to see revitalization. You know, yeah. Granville typically has been, you know, maybe a little bit of an underserved area, if you want to use that kind of terminology. So I'm sure it's great. You know, so you love to see your area, you know, revitalizing and coming to life and seeing vibrance. That's definitely what you got going on here.
Yeah.
I look around and I see, you know, obviously you do the food thing. So there's all kinds of various, you know, pickled items, barbecue sauces, obviously the salts, which I want to talk a little bit more about the salts in a second. But there's so many things, but there's a lot of things that are ancillary things to that, like the cutting board, some of the woodworks. I see some textiles and things that I do. What are some of the more off the wall things that maybe not off the wall, but not food actual items that you're running here?
Sure. We have some really unique stuff. We have some Brookstone Soaps uses our J.Q. Dickinson salt to make wonderful, like, bath bombs and soaps and body butters and stuff like that.
Scrubs.
That are exfoliating. Scrubs, yeah.
Scrubs.
I say that like I know what that is.
I talked about the candles this morning at our B&I meeting, that the Lineage candles from Virginia that are
mandels.
Just, yeah,
I love how you brought in.
It's a tobacco and spice candle. It smells like walking into my Uncle Kenny's house when I was a kid. He smoked a tobacco pipe. There's like a maple bourbon. And
Wiley cider right here.
Yeah. A cider and a whiskey
quite nice.
Cedar. And,
I would drink this.
So those are pretty unique.
Right. And you really wish right now you could smell this through the mic. Oh, I guarantee it, because it's fantastic.
I didn't even get the tobacco spice mandel out of the meeting. Someone bought it from me before I could even leave the meeting today. So just really, you know, really cool stuff like that. A lot of pottery. We're actually light on pottery from the holidays. We have a lot more coming in, but Blackstream pottery and Brass Bell pottery.
Yeah, I saw that over
on
that table over there.
A lot of handmade pottery. You know, just kind of everything. I mean, we have some fragrances. We have these lotion candles are really cool. They're actually
Of them made in Appalachia.
Yeah, all of them made in Appalachia.
Now, define Appalachia to some of the folks here. What is the encompassing thing there?
So the Appalachian Mountain Range runs from Alabama to Ontario, actually.
Yep.
A lot of people don't realize it goes all the way up through Vermont and New York and up into Canada. So we kind of, we don't limit ourselves to, you know, West Virginia. Sometimes people,
I think Aaron's going to become a candle guy.
Yeah, he's a,
I don't know,
a mandel guy.
It's easy here with the.
Listen, ladies and gentlemen, if you've never experienced mandels, they are like masculine scented candles, and I suggest you give them a shot.
They're quite nice.
Yeah, I have, my wife got me one that smells like a barber shop. It has that kind of old school barbershop scent to it, and I'll light that in my office when I'm working at home.
I've got one at my desk right now, man, that I've been using some leather and cigar scent or whatever. I don't know, but it is actually pretty great.
What's that? Leather-bound books and rich mahogany.
Yeah, like, right. It's like reading the back of a wine
Anchorman.
Bottle.
Is that Anchorman?
Yeah. Anchorman, yeah, that's right.
But, yeah, we have a lot of baking mixes. Actually really excited about some new baking mixes we brought in that are from Raleigh Biscuit Company. They're gluten-free and vegan biscuit mixes, so you know, that are really, really good.
So ultimately, you were saying that Appalachia is not just West Virginia.
Yeah.
These products come from all the whole stretch there.
There are people that come in and say, is this made in West Virginia? I'm like, well, that's not what we do. You know, we do all of Appalachia, and Appalachia's a lot. You know, it stretches from Alabama to Ontario, like I said. West Virginia is the only state that's totally encapsulated by the Appalachian Mountain Range. But Appalachia, you know, like Western North Carolina and the mountains there, they're just like us.
Oh, you
know,
yeah,
they're,
it's beautiful,
same
too.
Same kind of hardy people, yep, that are, you know, resilient and
self-sufficient.
Used to the snow and, yep, you know.
Is it much of it coming from north of here, or is most of it really south of
some
here?
Some stuff in PA, yeah, New York. We do have some honey and stuff from a place just into Canada, just because we really like their products. They make these beeswax food wraps. So instead of, like, aluminum foil or
I love
plastic
that.
Wrap.
That's such an awesome idea.
Keep
I love
your
food, that.
They're made out of beeswax, and you reuse them. You just wash them off and use them again. And so they're just really neat things like that.
You can
that
wrap
that
various things to take on picnics in them and stuff.
Right?
Yeah, I just think it's a really neat
take
idea.
Take them all, wash them off, and use them again instead of throwing it away. You know,
right.
Sustainability is
enough
plastic. A part of that. Yeah,
enough
sustainability
plastic
is a part of what we do. I definitely seek out products that are in glass, you know, as far compared to plastic, that sort of thing. You know, sustainability is important for us. You know, we obviously, you know, nature's important. We love the honeybees. We do a lot with, you know, do a lot of honey. We have a bee sugar cookie that we sell.
I was just going to say, I mentioned it looks like a little piece of a hive, right?
Yeah,
looks like
right
a honeycomb. Yeah, it's so super fantastic.
Every one of those we sell, we make a dollar donation to the Bee Conservancy. And so they put honey beehives and gardens in, like, urban schools and teach the kids about the importance of those things. And so we really just kind of, that sustainability is a part of it for us too, for sure. But yeah, and all, like I said, all over Appalachia. I mean, it is, you know, Virginia, North Carolina, PA, Maryland, Ohio. I mean, we have stuff from everywhere. Kentucky. We really try to kind of, you know, seek out the best stuff.
Yeah, now while these are great everyday items to use, you know, in your kitchen, they're also great gift ideas. So you do a lot of gift baskets this year, I bet?
Sure, yeah, we do a lot of gift baskets. We get a lot of people who come in and say, you know, my cousin lives in California now and I want to make a basket for her that's just all, you know, local stuff and really cool. And so we did a ton of gift baskets this
year.
Great
way to represent.
Yeah, we have gift cards as well. We do have an online store, so the people that don't, you know, that don't live close can shop on our website and order things and have it shipped to them. But yeah, it's
tell me a little bit about the boxes. Tell me about the monthly subscription boxes a little bit.
Sure. So each month, each season, I should say, it's kind of each season, we put together a collection of, you know, six or seven different things that complement each other well. And you can order that and have it shipped to somebody as a gift. You know, this past fall, we had one that was all kind of, we had a kind of a sushi theme box that we sell on our site. So it had
Appalachian sushi.
Yeah, it had a handmade wooden sushi board from Thomas Work, some handmade wooden chopsticks. Lindera Farms makes a wonderful ponzu sauce and a lemongrass soy sauce.
Not gonna lie, that was a little bit of a plot twist, man. Kind of zigged on me there.
Can we do a trout sushi?
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, trout sushi's great. Yeah. Right. But it's, you know, we do, as long as it's cool and artisanally made in Appalachia, we'll sell it.
Yeah, that's awesome.
People ask, what's your jury process? We don't really, you know, it's kind of a jury of two. You know, my business partner Nancy and I, if we like it and you make it here by hand, you know, we'll sell it. I mean, we want to promote that. That's our point, isn't to be uninclusive. Our point is to get the word out about, you know, cool stuff being made here. It's not a club that you have to be, you know, exclusive membership of. It's, you know, if we like it and it's cool, we'll sell it.
Well, it's fantastic, man. I look around, and I've had some of the food. It's absolutely terrific, and I think you're doing great down here.
Thank you. Yeah,
let's talk about some of these products a little bit. Yeah. So you mentioned this ocean in West Virginia,
yes.
Right? So you actually, so many people, it's like, man, I'm a long way from the ocean, but you're not actually.
Right. Well, millions of years ago, right, we were all underwater here. The Iapetus Ocean was kind of what disconnected much of North America from, like, the Baltics and stuff. And that ocean has, you know, is now still trapped under the earth, under the Kanawha Valley. And it's kind of one of, you know, a lot of people don't realize, long before West Virginia was coal country, it was salt country.
Oh, yeah.
In the late, you know, 1800s, our salt was named the best salt in the world at the Paris World's Fair.
I mean, one of the most valuable commodities in the world, like more than gold. Like, right. I mean, try eating food without salt, man.
Right.
You actually can't even live without it, really.
Right.
Right?
Yeah. So people, your body needs it. And, you know, people don't realize that's why there's a, you know, there's a salt well, you know,
right.
Town in West Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
There were salt wells, especially in the Kanawha Valley. Kanawha Red Salt, it was known as. Most people were pulling that brine up and boiling it down mm-hmm. to make salt. J.Q. Dickinson obviously did it a little differently. He had the idea to just lay it out in the sun and let the sun and the, you know, mountain breeze do the work. And it's kind of crazy to think about. I mean, I've been there a lot and seen the process. And the only thing that's really different is that the pipe that goes down is made out of PVC now instead of a hollowed out log. Like from the 1800s.
What was the depth on that again?
It's almost 400 feet
wow.
down under Malden. Malden's kind of, if you leave Charleston going east on 60 toward like on the Midland Trail toward Montgomery, Malden's right there on the right. It's one of the first little exits. The family farm, the Dickinson farm's right there along the river. You know, they've got cattle out there. I mean, it's still a farm.
So let me ask you this. So because I'm a question guy, maybe you'll know the answer to this and maybe you won't. But so at one point, that depth, was there a spring or something that told them? How did they know there was salt
sure.
there?
So it was obviously shallower.
Right.
200 years ago, they were drilling a well and got that saltwater brine to come out of the earth. So it was kind of one of those things that was discovered, just like oil in Texas
right.
and other places. They discovered that this saltwater brine would come up from under the earth when they were drilling wells. And so that's kind of where it started. Dickinson wasn't the first person to do that. He heard word of it. He was over in the eastern part of course, that was Virginia at the time, not West Virginia. And so he heard word of the salt wells in West Virginia and their success. And so it was kind of like a gold rush kind of thing. He was one of the people that came over in, I think, 1817. They drilled their first well in Malden there they bought a piece of land there and drilled a well and it took.
Yeah. And I've seen some of the pictures down there. So they have these big drying houses, kind of like,
yeah,
you know, kind of
like
covered.
Greenhouses. They're
yeah.
kind of like clear greenhouses.
And then there's a big tarp of some sort or whatever. It's all kind of laid out on one of the
tables that are covered in black tarps.
And uh-huh.
So that attracts the sun.
It helps dry.
And
it
helps to dehydrate yeah. and yeah, evaporate the
now,
water.
Now, these are world recognized salts, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
How so?
Over 800 retail locations in the world.
But so you call these finishing salts many times.
Sure.
And so, you know, a lot of people don't think of what that, you know, initially when I heard it, I didn't even know what
yeah,
it meant,
so,
a finishing salt.
And it's pure form like this and the coarser grind. It's very flaky salt. It's very different from the salt that you find in salt mines
yeah, your Morton's,
underground that have been hard for a million years. This salt was seawater a couple of months ago. So it's very flaky and it melts. And so we do grind it in different ways. We have like a popcorn salt, like a fine grind that you would just use to replace salt in your cooking. The finishing salts are more for like after, you know, you grill a steak, you take it off to rest, you're going to put some of that.
I did it last night. I have some of your smoked finishing salt
yeah,
at the house.
Oh yeah.
And I just got a side of beef in. So I had some, you know, fresh cut ribeyes.
Nice.
And
yeah.
And
a little bit of that on that steak and it just kind of melts right into it.
Terrific.
And you can taste every little kind of crystal on the meat. And really we've got, you know, they do a lot with it. We've got that mushroom and herb salt is incredible on like roasted vegetables or grilled vegetables. Again, you're kind of the finishing salts, you're going to use it toward, that's why it's called a finishing
right.
salt.
You know, right before you eat it, just
yeah,
a rest
right
little.
You eat it to add some flavor. We do have a lot of different grinds. We also have salt and pepper grinders. Mm-hmm. You can actually, you know, put on your table to add salt and pepper to your food. So, but yeah, it's definitely different. It's very flaky, very mineral rich. It tastes good and actually has lower sodium content than the hard salts that you find like in mines underground. Doesn't have as much sodium in it. So
right.
it's really, you know, well,
way
it's
healthier.
Unmessed with, right? Like that's the,
which is
can taste
awesome.
Those minerals yeah. and stuff. I mean, it's and we have as a part of the process when the brine comes up, it's sitting in these big tanks, kind of settling. And the heavier stuff that settles to the bottom, we actually sell as well. I mean, we use every part of it. It's called Nagari, and it has like coagulant properties to it. So people use it to make cheese. We actually sell the Nagari to cheesemakers,
wow. yeah.
kind of like rennet.
Yeah,
you know, they use right. it to make cheese.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people just we sell it in little bottles. A lot of people just take a swig of it every day, just kind of like how, you know, there are 74 minerals in that little bottle of Nagari, so it's really yep. good for you. How people used to take the sulfur waters in West Virginia, that sort of thing. A lot of health properties to it. And we actually sell it in a little pouch with New Year's coming up. This is a good idea. We sell it as a little hangover helper.
Yep.
You know, we
sell
replace a little pouch,
that stuff.
Yep. Stir that into a glass of water and chug it down, and it helps your body kind of recover. You know, all those vitamins and minerals that are there naturally. So,
yeah, I come to found out a long time ago that the process that they make table salt with is not really good for you.
No.
And may actually lead to some of the thyroid problems that we see here because the iodine is such an important part, you know, and they strip this stuff chemically and then they right. put all this. It's really bizarre what we do to salt when you don't have to do it.
No.
So I never really got it. So for years I've been using natural salts because of the higher mineral contents and the less, you know, one of the anti-caking agents is an aluminum product, you know, in typical salts, man. And
right.
I don't need that.
Yeah, no, you definitely don't. The only ingredient in your salt should be salt.
Yeah, there you go. Right. Yeah. Go figure.
Yeah.
All right, what are a few of the other products I think you really want to kind of talk about here this morning? I see you got some great peanuts.
Sure, yeah.
Not to talk about your nuts. But.
No, yeah, that's a common discussion point, but... Yeah, so I just wanted to point out, we work with a lot of other makers that use our salt to produce products. So we have, like, Black Dog Coffee uses our salt to make chocolate bars.
Oh, wow. Yeah, so you're getting this ring, kind bars. Of expanding ring out.
Belmont Peanuts here in Cortland, Virginia, they use our salt to make a few different flavors of peanuts, you know, salted peanuts and Toffee Crunch peanuts. And so we've kind of partnered with them and co-branded with them on some of those products. A lot of... the products that we sell, you know, the soaps and the bath bombs and stuff, they use our salts in those products. But yeah, and I started to say, we created these new spice blends this year. We've got 5 different spice blends. We're kind of diversifying, what we do there in Malden. And so the Appalachian Za'atar might be of particular interest to you. I know you have
I guarantee you I am the only person currently... maybe the only person that will hear this podcast that knows what za'atar is,
mm-hmm.
And I have a huge bag of it at my house.
Yeah,
and,
so some cool things, the bagel seasoning, the ranch I talked about. We partner with a lot of people to use our salts. One of the things that's actually interesting, we opened this store this year, and obviously, the support has been wonderful. We're out of some of our salts, like, for the year.
Yeah.
We won't have them again until... the spring when it's warm again.
Gotta try a new batch.
People kind of, they're like, what do you mean? I said, well, it's not warm enough in Charleston to evaporate salt water right now. So we don't, they're not going to really start making salt again until the spring. And that's something that, that kind of limited availability is something that I kind of like. Same thing with ramps. We sell a lot of pickled ramps, but we're out of pickled ramps until they come up again in the spring. So if you need a ramp fix, we do have some ramp salt. And, West Virginia Harvest, who does our pickled ramps, Chris Ura here in Morgantown, he makes a wonderful ramp Bloody Mary mix. So for like the New Year's, that's if you like Bloody Marys or especially red eyes, people that like red,
right.
In a cold beer, that Bloody Mary mix is
that's old school right there.
Incredible. So, and my dad loved red eyes.
Oh,
that
yeah,
was
but that's old
thing.
School. That's
we have plenty of that in stock, and that's something that is worth trying. If you like Bloody Marys, it's spicy and has that. The ramp flavor isn't overpowering, but it's there. They do a really, really good job with that.
Yeah, and a great way to represent Appalachia a little bit in there as
sure,
well.
Sure, yeah.
Does anybody ever come in and say Appalachia?
There are people.
Do you throw them out immediately?
Well, so we do catch a little flex sometimes because on the back of our staff shirts,
yeah,
we
I've
have the
it.
Phonetic pronunciation
yes.
of Appalachia. My grandma used to say, if you say it wrong, I'll throw an apple at you. So that kind of was a way to remember. I feel like I need to design that t-shirt. Like
I think
you're
right.
Throwing
yeah.
an apple at you.
Or keep a bucket of apples over there by the counter. There.
But, we just want to, it doesn't matter how you say it, as long as you're talking about it, right?
Yeah.
I mean, as long as you're spreading the word about the good things happening here, a lot of times it's all bad stuff that you hear about Appalachia, but the people here are good and hearty, and they're doing really, really cool things, and we're just trying to do our part to spread that word.
Fantastic, man. That is absolutely terrific.
I agree. It's a good way to wrap it up.
All right, so wrap it up right here. We're over at Appalachia Mercantile today. Where can they find you on the interwebs?
Yeah, so we are at there are two ways. Our online store is jqdappalachianmercantile.com. Our local website for the cafe here is appalachianmercantilewv.com. But what we'd really appreciate is a follow on social media. It's at appalachianmercantilewv on both Facebook and Instagram. We have some beautiful pictures of the products and the food and stuff on Instagram. You definitely want to give us a follow to see that stuff and keep up to date on what we've got in the store.
Yeah, you're on your phone all day anyway. Go there, get involved with it. Support Appalachia. Support your hometown and the people that are doing these things. And even better, stop by and take a look for yourself over here down in downtown Granville.
Yeah, we're at 1179 Main Street. We're right next to Town Hall here in Granville, right across the street from the fire department.
Can't miss it. You got that awesome truck sitting out front.
That's right. Yeah, my little farm truck sitting out there. So, yeah, we'd love to see you. Well, come on over.
All right. Fantastic. Let's wrap it.
Thanks, Aaron. Thanks, Joe.
Thank you. We'll